accession number 19590, Reel 5.
Bob Fredlow, Reel 5.
So we started eventually at the Nafis Social Club, played there for dancing on a Saturday night, I think it was. And our pay then used to be 7 and 6, and a nosh up in the Nafi, which were chips, sausage and beans, and 20 cigarettes. And that, those 20 cigarettes were more important than anything else, because everybody used to smoke. And then some of the times the lads used to buy us a beer or a pint of beer, which were outside, were a bit of a bar in one of the huts. Well, to cut a long, long story short, one night, it must have been after 10 o'clock or whatever time, this girl walked across the dance floor. And I nudged Jimmy. I said, "Jimmy," I said, "I'm having her." Well, little did I know that this young lady already saw me marching in the mornings, and all the other Nafi girls, they saw us marching in the morning, they picked so-and-so out, they picked so-and-so out. And then one night, to come out of the Nafi club, you had like a double door, you had inner door and then the big door outside. And it were open halfway one, and the other half, like a zigzag. And I went out there, I thought, the lads, they kept me pushing back, you see, and I thought, last out, I thought, what's going on? When I come round there, well, this girl stuck in the corner. And, of course, I had a word with her and all this. Not like I'm speaking now, well, as good as I could. And eventually, according to the legend, is that that was my wife eventually to be. And she always said that I told her then, "I'm coming back to marry you." And I always disputed that. You say, "Well, thanks," but it did work out like that. And I was on the carpet with the commanding officer for the prisoner of wars, not once, a few times, because in them days there were no fraternization, if you can remember that. So, you mustn't do this and you mustn't do that and you mustn't do the other. And eventually he said, I went on the carpet again. He said, "Is it serious?" And I says, "Yes, sir." He says, "Well, I give up." So that's how I got to know my wife through the Nafi Social Club. She was Mrs. Hepton Stall, was the manageress, and my wife was the charge hands and bookkeeper and God knows what. Those two run the place.
Is this in 1947?
Well, we were there in 1946, 47 and 48. And we both got more or less demobbed at the same time in 48. She went back to Dewsbury, and I went. The only way we were sent on leave to be discharged from the army, we finished them in Munster, and we all got 40 marks. And eventually I did go back to England, and the only way to stay were working on farms. You see, I couldn't work in my trade. No way.
Why not?
No, that wasn't allowed. You were an alien. I still got the alien passport. You were an alien. You were not allowed to work in your own trade. You could work on farms, yes, but not as a tradesman. And I actually sent a letter to King George. No. Yeah, requesting that about I wanted to go back into my own trade, that I was going to get married, and they told me when you are married, you can pursue your own trade, which I actually did. We got married in June 1950, on the 10th of June 1950, and then I still had the alien passport, but I could go into my trade. But unfortunately, Dewsbury, that's where I lived with their parents for 6 months before we got one up and one down. And there were no heavy steel industry except Sheffield. Well, I could get a job in Sheffield at any time, but no houses. You see, they were very, very, very scarce. So My brother-in-law, as I said before, he was a para, he was in Monte Cassino, and he worked in the building trade as a bricklayer, mason, and plasterer, whatever he did. Now, the big building firm were called Fred Ellis and Sons from Dewsbury. He had his own electrical department, own joiner department, blacksmith department, and all the lot. So I started there as a labourer and electrician type of thing. But he was one of the first one who got a JCB in this area. And the lad who operated this article, which was a converted Fortune Major tractor with an excavator at the back, it was a very, very crude implement in them days. He had a nervous breakdown after about 6 weeks. So Fred Ellis came, he says, well, you've been in the RAF, you've driven lorries and what? I said, well, I've driven a clay truck, I've driven lorries and all this, that and other. Have you got a license? I says, no, I had an RAF license. He says, well, write off to the RAF station in Lindome and let them transfer it from the pink form or whatever it were into a civil license, which I straight away sent it off. And what came back? A reply saying, sorry, 4 years has to elapse, you must go for a test. So I said to Fred Ellis, his brother took me to Wakefield, he said, no problem, I'll go for a test. I went for a test. I failed straight up, because you wasn't driving as the highway code said and all the lot. You were driving as you drive now, you see. So I failed. Well, the second time I passed. And he says, do you know anything about Jake? No, I don't know anything about it. He says, well, can you help us out while we get another driver? So I said, I don't know anything about it. He says, well, we'll get a fitter out from Tate's. They were in Otley in them days. The fitter came out and he said, this is that, that's this, and also, and explained this, and that was it. I went on my own. So I started with JCB, a little bits and bats digging here, and eventually it got more conversion to me. I found out it was pretty easy. I didn't have to do any work because the machine did the damn work for me. And I started playing again as a musician. And in them days, you see, you were treated like a little tin god because you did the excavation, and then the lads used to say, right, have a rest now, we lay the drains and all the lot, and then you can backfill it again. So I used to lie there and have a little sleep, you see, because I was a musician playing about 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And then this machine grew onto me, and I carried on. We were doing petrol station. I used to excavate petrol tanks, never mind the electricity, because I was getting electrical money, wages as an electrician. So I carried on this machine. While the old man died, while Fred Ellis died, and his son took over, and it got to a stage eventually the firm went bankrupt. Well, the only way you could find Tom Ellis, his son, were at a certain pub. You see, he used to live there. You see. So, and then we actually built a higher plant place in Morley at Beacon Glassworks, they call it, and we built this thing, and there was an advert in the paper all of a sudden, wanted excavator operator. So I went there and I told them that I know this place because I built it and all the lot, and yes, and there was a chap there called Terry Garford. He was a fitter foreman, one of the finest fitter foremen I've ever known in my life. Terrific. A terrific fitter and all the lot. He says, right, you can start tomorrow. I said, I don't do them tricks. I give my notice in, like I do anywhere else. That were only the second job in my life. You see, after the build, Thyssen were the first one, then the big builder, then higher plant. I said, if I like it, I'll stay. Guess what? 27 and a half year later. And the firm were called Frederick Parker from Leicester. And Frederick Parker made gravel pit plant, tarmac implant, crushing plant, machine, concrete mixers, the little ones, the big ones, you name it, they made it. Conveyor belts, riddles, the big screens and all the lot. And I was with them for 27 and a half year. But what Frederick Parker did was he created a Frederick Parker pension scheme, 1958. Called, and I started with the firm in 1960 or 61, I'm not quite sure, it doesn't make any difference. And to join that pension scheme, you had to have a medical before you were able to get in to that scheme. So I had a medical, and it was a percentage of your wage, 1% or 3%, whatever. And in the beginning, it used to work out at threepence or 3 pence a week, which were taken out of your wage so you don't even see the money, you see. So it was just, you paid into the pension scheme without you knowing, you see. So I did this for 27 and a half years. Well, obviously, the percentage got more, you see, and I've still got the wage slip before I retired. I've still got it upstairs in a box. My last amount I paid in 1979 when I retired. When I retired in 1979, I paid then £5 a week, which I didn't even know I paid it, because it were not even, it were out of the grass wage, you see, because you didn't feel it. But I have the benefit now, that 27 and a half year private pension.
And how were you treated by English people once you settled into England?
No problem, because my brother-in-laws and all the lot, they were all ex-soldiers. And my brother-in-laws and my wife's brothers, they were in the army, or two of them were in the army, so no problem. And the other brother-in-laws who married girls, they've been in the army. As I said, Tom, he was a para. So that was all right. But you always do get one. Oh, what a little bit hostile. But the only problem was then afterwards, when I got mastered the English language, and I when I was working for Hire Plant, and I was buying myself and working as a musician, and I was paying tax and pay as you earn, that was it. And I didn't drink, I had a cigarette. I would never ever been a heavy smoker. I never been, even now, I'm not a drinker whatsoever. I have a couple of pints, and that I always have done, and I always maintain I will do. There's no harm in that. It'll do you the world of good. And all the money I earned, I put it into, saved it, and we bought the bungalow, extended and all this, that and other. I bought a new car, and then, of course, you get these jealous people. Even in my firm, they were waiting for the pubs to open at 7 o'clock at night, and all their wage went on a Friday or a Thursday. And how the heck can he afford a new car? He gets the same wage as me. I said, easy. Very easy. I don't wait for the pubs to open at 7 o'clock at night. I save mine. My wife, she did work a little bit, but when my daughter was born, she never worked. I was the sole provider, but as it happened, I was burning the candle on two ends. You see, I was working during the day and playing at night times, while 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. I needed the money eventually for my daughter to be educated at university, which I achieved. And it's as simple as that.
How do you feel now in 1999 about having served in the Second World War in the German Air Force?
Well, it's a long, long time ago. You were called up, you did your duty as a soldier, as an Air Force man, or a soldier, as a para. And it's an experience you had, which I do not regret, because a para, it's something which is to be proud on, regardless which nation you are. If you're British, French, German, or whatever, a para is a para, it's an elite. And the comradeship between paras is unbelievable. I'm a member of the British Para Association, and the Leeds branch and the Wakefield branch, and you're just one of theirs, you see. All right. Nowadays you have the same maroon berry, it's just a different badge. But I do my parades here, Cenotaph and whatever, you know, the Remembrance Day. Or when we go over there with some of the lads go with them, and we share cars and we go over there. This is usually the pioneer meetings, and then we have the service there. We have cemetery services or whatever, or Monte Cassino remembrance reunion in May. So you get to know. I know quite a lot of the lads who live around Worthing Casino, and you just He's his friends, as simple as that. See, I mean, after 55 years, it's a different outlook than what you had in the old days, you see. Obviously, you had, when my English were pretty poor, see, some of them, you always get somebody who begrudges you what you've done and what you have achieved and all the lot, and you're saying, oh, the heck can he do it? And we can't. It's simple, isn't it? You see, you use the head and make what you can. And I had a good wife and all the lot. Unfortunately, she died a year ago. We were married 48 years and we plugged along. We had a daughter. She was educated at Bretton Hall, which is part of Leeds University. She got a degree. She's gone on since, and she's still at the university there at Bretton Hall. But she's a deputy head of faculties now. And she always used to say, can I borrow a brown one, which was a 10-shilling note? Or so on. So I used to say, I'll have a tree behind my house which grows pound notes and 10-shilling notes. And then when I used to say, you borrow the 10-shilling, I says, can I have it back? And she used to say, don't be so begrudging. And she said, you know. And eventually, I'll pay you back when I'm a millionaire. And she paid me back 10 times over with what she achieved in her lifetime.